Thanks for joining us again on the Blue Baggers podcast after a 23-point victory over Hawthorn. I'm Chris, and I'm unfortunately not joined by Andy in the Bagger basement. We're having some technical issues at the moment, so I've got him via Skype, and again, he probably doesn't sound brilliant, but hello, Andy. How are you?
I rarely sound brilliant.
Well, that's true. We'll be honest, but yeah, unfortunately,
hopefully it comes across okay.
Yeah, look, it's not going to be great, but we figured we'd still persist with the show rather than sort of let a week lapse. So we do apologise that the audio is probably not up to the usual standard as it is, and the content might not be either. That'll be on us, though.
Yeah, that's true.
So 23-point win over Hawthorn. How did you feel about the game, Andy? And I'll preface this by saying I was at the game, watched it live. You couldn't make it for your own reasons, but you watched it on replay, yep. So it's a bit more fresh in your head, and you got a different perspective to what I did at the game. I didn't watch it on replay.
Yeah, well, I had to watch it on replay, unfortunately. It's always different watching a game when it's not live and you know the outcome of the game. You can be a little bit more relaxed. But I thought we needed to win the game, you know, it was a very important game to win, and we're expected to win. At the end of the day, we came away with the 4 points with a good 23-point win. There were lapses in the game, which we've seen before, but at the end of the day, we did steady the ship, and we got through in the end without too much of an exciting finish.
Regardless, it's much better doing a podcast of how we perform after a win. It's
absolutely,
and it's been
easier.
a few weeks in between drinks on that front, so. We'll do the new segment, glass half full, glass half empty, and maybe kick it off with, do you want to go half full this time?
I'll go half full because I've been half empty the last couple of weeks. So
get optimistic.
I've written a few things down. So for my half full, I've said that Walsh, if we didn't already know it, is an absolute superstar. We got through a full game with TDK being uninjured and got to see him go forward and kick a nice goal in the first. I thought the Crips looked very good. I thought he looked actually fast in this game for the first time, and not lethargic what we've seen during this year, you know, mainly due to that back injury, but I thought he looked close to full health that I've seen. I thought it was Zach Williams' best game after he came off a bit of scrutiny in the media and from fans for some of the performances earlier this year. And the other one is, like I said in the intros, you know, the game was in the balance in the third, but we did steady the ship and came across the finishing line with the 4 points. So I was really happy with that.
I think it's a good take and good way of looking at it. And I'll jump in now with glass half empty and take a negative view. And as we always do, we sort of preface this by saying Carlton supporters have varied opinions and are passionate either way, whether they're sort of the supporting type or the ones that like to get stuck into the players and the clubs and take that pessimistic view. But I'll take that for this segment. So I guess if you look at it and go, well, we won the game, but we didn't win it pretty. It was a pretty ugly game, and we only beat Hawthorn, who I think is 17th on the ladder, second last. It wasn't a big scalp. It wasn't a convincing win. Our kicking inside 50s let us down still, and it's an ongoing problem that we have week to week. We're number 18 in the comp for kicking efficiency, which is not great considering you know, our game plan previously, and it's a bit hard to tell this year, but it's based on lots of kicks rather than in the kick-to-handball ratio is high. Red time goals, we got absolutely killed again, and we've not sort of found an answer to that, and we had a particularly disappointing finish to that first half whereby we let them kick two goals within, it might have been 18 seconds or so. So following on the red time goals, and it wasn't just that quarter, but what a disappointing way to carry us into the half after getting a nice comfortable lead. We went into the halftime with a goal after the siren dribbling through, which is pathetic at the time. So I'll look at it that way. We'll get the two perspectives there, and probably the truth lies somewhere in the middle of those two, as it usually does.
And can I quickly just add to that glass half full, Harry Mackay is still leading the Coleman, five clear of Tex Walker on 35 goals, which is
very,
you know,
nice.
If you said that at the start of the year that, you know, Harry Mackay would be leading the Coleman and he'd be doing it consistently every week, you'd be taking that every day.
Yeah, in the last two games, or even longer than that, if we're led to believe what we hear, he's been under, you know, sustained sort of injury issue as well. So that is impressive, and it's nice to see a Carlton player. I know it's an individual sort of honour that goes there. It's not a team honour, it's an individual one, but it is great to see the Carlton name in brackets after that, and we'd love him to win a Coleman regardless. I'll give you one for a half full too. I thought it was great, the 45,000 fans there. What was that, a week after Eddie Maguire had said Saturday afternoon, or pretty much declared Saturday afternoon football dead? 45,000 Carlton and Hawthorn supporters from teams that are struggling a bit this year. It was a great result. Weather was...
You were at the game. How did you feel the... How do you feel the crowd was broken up? Was it a majority Carlton crowd?
Yeah, it certainly was. I mean, you got your different segments, so it's a bit hard depending on where you're actually sitting, but definitely, so, you know, when you look outside, when you're walking out the ground or walking to the ground, I'd say, you know, it was 2-3 to 1 Carlton to Hawthorn. So the majority would have been Carlton supporters there. So it's a great turnout, really. 45,000 Saturday afternoon for two teams not really flying at the moment. So that's a glass half full for you.
Let's talk about a few takeaways from the game, Chris. I think one we both agree on is let's keep Zach Williams on the back flank. And there's a pretty interesting stat over the last two games. When Williams played in defence against Melbourne, he was at 87% disposal efficiency against Hawthorn, where he played predominantly back and had that more of a free rein off that back flank. He was 84% in relation to disposal efficiency. For the game against Hawthorn, he had 764 metres gained, which was the number one metres gained for the game. So I think we found our position for Zach Williams at this point in time, when it looks like that we're favouring towards Doherty going through the midfield rather than Williams at the moment.
It's no real surprise with Williams, is it? That's where he's played most of his football, you know, probably 90-95% of his football, and performed. It's the reason why, you know, he turned us on when we recruited him. It was based on his halfback form. He played that one game, that one final, and we all keep talking about it, and that excited us. But realistically, it was the work that he did off the halfback line that attracted us. We have the hope that he'd play midfield, and he still can, and maybe he still will at a later date. But we've talked about him potentially not being as fit as he needs to be for the midfield role. His disposal efficiency, not so good. His efforts weren't so good in the midfield. It's a lot harder with your gut running to play there, and other aspects of your game will drop off with fatigue. He goes back to a half-back flank where he owns, understands it, knows it, and that's a great result, sort of leading the team with metres gained for the day, and they were quality disposals too. Some of that kicking was beautiful to see.
And the follow-up is that the other recruit we got with Williams was obviously Adam Saad, who had 658 metres gained. So both Williams and Saad were in the top two for the game, for metres gained, for approximately, roughly over 1,400 metres, which is exactly why we recruited both those players, and that's how we win the games, with that real run off the back flank.
They're big numbers, and that gives you a lot of drive setting forward. So it's a great result, and as you mentioned, it's meant Doherty's moved up to a wing, and his performances have improved as a result. He's playing with some real freedom up there and utilising his strengths a little bit better. So I think that move sticks. It stays there, and at least until Williams builds up his body. He's had a taste of what it's required, having played in the midfield for the first few rounds when he was uninjured or not suspended. He knows what he's got to work to if that's truly where he wants to play, but pretty handy to have him off a half-back flank producing those numbers and that quality.
Yeah, agree with that.
What do you think about Mark Pitnett and Tom De Koning in the ruck together, the dual sort of ruckman?
Yeah, it looked like it worked, didn't it? Obviously, TDK came in for the rested, in inverted commas, Casbolt, and TDK looked great, and I think it was a really good duo. It was great to see TDK go forward, like I said earlier in the show, and take a good mark and go back and kick a goal. And it's great that we have that flexibility with him to do that, while we can, rely on Pitnett to be more of that grunt ruckman, and TDK to kind of be more of that athletic ruckman who we can afford to throw forward, because we can't do that with Pitnett.
Well, you say that, but interesting, he kicked one of the best crumbing goals of the day moving forward.
Yes.
I mean, that's a rarity.
I mean, that's a rarity. And but in terms of the structure, Pitnett pretty much is a one-position player.
Yeah. I'll agree with you on that one. But I think it worked quite well. And I think you can put Pitnett in the forward line. And as we said, he's probably lucky to get on, but shows some good dexterity to pick the ball off the ground and kick a crumbing goal. Not long after that, he took a mark out sort of on the lead maybe 45 metres out, dished off the handball. But if he can play 20% of game time in the forward line, he plays, 15-20 on the bench and the rest in ruck, there might be some good splits. And TDK is just so agile and athletic. Look at him out there. He's just bouncing around. And he was exciting. Considering that was his first game back, he just brings a different dimension completely and a different dimension to Pitnet as well. But, yeah, I mean, it's only the test was against Hawthorn, but it looked like it worked there. Thoughts? Did you get to see the Doherty chase down on Frost?
Yes, yeah.
Holding That's the big, ball?
Yep.
Big moment. There are a few big moments in the game, which we'll touch on, but that was one. That was one right in front of me, and we were talking about Doherty just before, then playing with some freedom, flexibility. He chased Frost down, and Frost is lightning quick in a straight line, and ran after him, and I thought, yeah, that was really pivotal, and that's our captain, and at a time when we needed some lifting, and he certainly did it. The other one, obviously. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, Mackay kick.
Well, let's go with the other tackle, Nick Newman.
Oh, Nick Newman, yep.
Absolutely changed the momentum of the game. What looked like a done and dusted goal. He found a way to tag, I think it was Kaczynski. And, the tide had turned there. He makes that tackle, saves a certain goal. And I think we kicked the next three after that. Really pivotal moment in the game, but sort of a never say die attitude. And very much like the Doherty tackle. Really good tackles and really important for momentum shifting. In saying that, I still thought our tackling was pretty average by and large. Yep. I don't know how it came across on TV, but at the game, it was very frustrating. Particularly, I think our tackling in tight is okay, but whenever there's any space at all, we just get sold, walked around, and cannot stick a tackle, apart from the two we've mentioned.
Let's talk about the Mackay goal, though. I know that's one that you were talking about a lot after the game.
Well, pretty exciting times, wasn't it?
That is a huge goal.
Yeah, and again, right in front of me, I was in the Olympic stand, and pivotal time. I mean, it looked like we probably had the game sewn up, but with this Carlton team, you never know exactly. But went back, milked 30 seconds off the clock. Hadn't had a great day leading up to the incident, but come the moment, cometh the man. And he must have slotted that from, 55-60 on the terrible angle for a left footer in front of the Blues faithful, and that certainly got me out of the seat, that's for sure.
What about, how'd you find Matt Owies? We've seen this might be the third time that we've seen Matt Owies can do it forward, but he can also do it back, can't he? With some pretty great defensive work and tackles right on the line when you need it.
He's running hard. I don't know how good a runner he actually is, because he certainly doesn't have the body type that you'd normally associate with that, but that doesn't matter so much if you're a smart runner and a hard runner when it matters. And it could pick up, because I'm loving seeing what he's doing there. Not getting massive numbers, but that's fine. But he's working right back into that back line and coming up with some pivotal moments. There's some brilliant tackles, but he's also then pushing forward and getting on the end of it. So, he must have a reasonable tank, and it's something I didn't think he'd have. I sort of had him pigeonholed pretty much as your forward pocket that wouldn't leave the forward 50 too much, but it's brilliant to see the two-way run.
That's the third time he's done it, isn't it? That's the third game that he's done something like this.
I reckon you're right. Yeah, absolutely. And in the one sort of chain that way and got on the end of this week and kicked another goal. So I think, for a team that lacks that two-way running and is very often criticised for not having that defensive running capability and being forward runners, it's brilliant. Who knows, he might change the culture a little bit by showing, leading by example with those efforts as a, fifth game player or so?
Yep.
I would like to highlight Will Setterfield's game. First half, I was pretty down on it. And the way I was looking at it is, if you think, and we talk about David Cunningham being a clean player, I think Will Setterfield's almost the opposite of that. And if the opposite of clean is dirty, he's a bit of a dirty player. And what I mean by that is he's a bit of a fumbler, a two-grabber. He's clumsy with tackles, gives away some of those easy free kicks. And he was frustrating me for the first half of the game, but he did come good, I think, towards the end of the game. By the end of the game, he probably actually had a reasonable game, but he needs to get cleaner.
He's an inside mid as opposed to Cunningham as an outside. So
absolutely.
Maybe not the greatest analogies in that sense, but I know what you're saying. But a lot of the kicks, even forward, are pretty. Even when he has a bit of time, some of his kicks look. It's that 40-meter kick to really nowhere when he does have the time. I know we can excuse players when they're kicking out of the pack and trying to hack forward just to gain meters. That's different. But no, look,
it just seems to be a bit of everything.
His disposal isn't it's not a highlight of his game.
No, and it's even just a handball where you've got an open man handing it and just not giving it to them in the hands. He might just be, you know, half a meter in front or behind when he goes to do that, picking the ball off the ground, two touches, and therefore he's under pressure and gets tackled immediately. Same with marking contests. I mean, we saw it last week, a really clear example of dropping what would otherwise be an easy mark. And, you know, these things happen to players, and you're not going to be clean all the time. He's just got a very high percentage of that occurring. And, yeah, comparing him to Cunningham, they're two completely different players, but still that one touch versus two touch is just as important when you're in close as well.
Yep.
David
David, I was about to say David Teague. I know that's one that you wanted to... What do you think about the spray? Because you had a bit of an opinion last time, didn't you?
Yeah, well, this time we hear that this is the biggest spray he's given the playing group, and probably well-deserved as well. You lose all that momentum going into half-time.
It's a killer.
Not playing that well, and you're playing the 17th team on the ladder. A team that's beaten us, what was it, 17 out of 18 times before, and the team we've been in positions to win and have failed to execute and actually win the game. So he had every right to give him a massive spray, and you don't want to give too many sprays throughout a year because they become meaningless. And if you give one of those sprays, it's important to see how the group responds, because that'll sort of give you an idea of your standing and the standing of the group. So the fact that they came out after halftime and performed much better, took the win, and held on to the lead this time and played with a bit more purpose, suggests that the spray worked, and it's good that they responded in a positive manner.
That he has given two public sprays, which he's always pretty keen to comment on after the games. Do you find that a little bit on the nose?
Keep it in-house. Is that what you're sort of referring
to?
Yeah. I think so. I think, you play the media how you should, with a straight bat most of the time. I think keep that in-house, because you start telling them every time, they're going to know, they're going to start taking tallies. And
I kind of feel that maybe Teague feels there's perception that he's a pretty nice guy, which by all accounts he is. And is it a bit of overcompensation? Not saying that the team didn't deserve a spray and that he would not give one anyway, but is it overcompensation when it just, it does get brought up in the media and, commented on? I wouldn't be, personally, I think it'd be better if, there's cameras everywhere. We can see when coaches are giving a spray. I wouldn't be kind of touching on it too much and just leaving it, it just says 1,000 words, doesn't it?
Yeah, although I tend to agree, and we've got to understand he's still a young coach, and there's this perception out there, and the media tries to play up to that. So I think you might be right. Maybe he obviously has heard some of the criticism that's come his way. We see him week in, week out in the box, very sort of impassioned, I guess.
Placid,
some would say under control and, level-headed. Yep. Depends on how you look at it. He obviously hasn't changed that, because I don't think we've seen a change in demeanour in the coach's box. But, yeah, obviously it's behind sort of closed doors, but then coming out and, presenting the media and informing them. Perhaps that's sort of a response to let everybody know that he's not the cute, cuddly teddy bear that perhaps he's perceived as.
Yep.
We can't talk for much longer without bringing up the Lachie Plowman incident. It seems stupid to even call it that.
Yep.
The football collision that has found him suspended by the tribunal for 2 weeks. First the MRO, or the match review panel, Michael Christian, and then to the tribunal with a challenge, and we're going to go higher than that after, that held up that 2 weeks, so we're appealing, and I'm glad that's the case. So, I mean, it's one where we're making a stand, and I just read before that it looks like he hasn't flown up to Sydney anyway, regardless of the outcome of the appeal. He's got a knee, so it looks like he was going to miss a week regardless. So the club's doing this, you might argue, well, why are they bothering for 1 week?
The principle.
And that's exactly what they've said. And I agree with that. I'm fine. We're both kind of principles people when it comes to that. You need to do it. This will make a statement about the game moving forward. And I'd be surprised if 17 other football clubs weren't in support of Carlton's actions for taking this up, because it could very easily be them next week, and it will be them next week if that is deemed 2 weeks. Is that where we want to go? No, it's not. Protect the head, absolutely, but to pretend that the sport doesn't have an inherent risk of head knocks is wrong, and it always will be. And if you change that and take everything out, no sort of collisions out, it won't be football anymore. Protect
here's
the head.
Here's my take. Look, three players were suspended over the weekend. The Nick Holman tackle, where he received, was it 2 weeks?
2 weeks, the same, yep.
Rundown tackle. That was so outrageous that I think everyone knew that just, if that was going to not be successfully appealed or challenged, then we're all in trouble about where the game's heading. I don't think the AFL could afford to have egg on their face for 2 out of 3. So for them to suspend 3 players, you know, the Pickett one's a separate one. He was unsuccessful. But then for them to then essentially overturn 2 of their decisions, they're not going to cop it. So I think if Plowman does that last week or next week and it's separate from the Holman incident, I say he gets off, or he's not even... Yeah, maybe he's reported, but he'll get off on appeal. The AFL would not allow 2 players, after they've sent a strong message of 2 weeks, to be overturned. Not a chance in hell.
I think that's a great take, and I think you're probably right, which is unfortunate, because that's not how you should be governing a sport as the governing body, which, you know, is ridiculous. And to think about it, are they going to come out and admit that these umpires made a horrendous decision by not awarding a free kick? If it's bad enough to get 2 weeks, but not given a free kick on the day, and then Holman one's the same. He actually received the free kick. So are they going to come out and say, these umpires got this horribly wrong? Like, where do you draw the line? And I'll ask this, what is Lachie Plowman meant to do in that situation? What's his alternative?
And declare, there's no alternative.
What can he do? What can he do?
There's going to be head knocks. There's going to be concussions. I think what Plowman's defence said was, can we stop looking at the injury first and then backtracking? Which is saying that, in all fairness, if O'Meara doesn't get knocked out there, we're not even talking about this. All we're seeing is a good hard contest.
Same with the Holman tackle.
Exact same thing. So you can't just look at the injury and then try and work out what went wrong with it. Because unfortunately, like you said, it's a contact sport. Players are going to get injured, and we are doing a lot to protect the head, but it's inevitable. But you can't just start trying to find ways to ping people just because someone suffers a concussion. And that's exactly what they've done with the Plowman, who had absolutely no other option but to go hard at the ball. And had he not gone hard at the ball, then you just have all these Carlton supporters and people that watch the game of calling him out for shirking a contest.
Hear, hear. Well said. Ridiculous. He's not going to step around him, or, you know, open the invitation up for his opponent to get first use of the ball. It's a spirited game. It's a competitive game. It's unbelievable if that's the case and that's the ruling. And the fact that the tribunal and the match review panel have deemed it a bumping contest, not a marking contest.
Mm. Yep.
That's ultimately what the argument is, and that's what Carlton are challenging. The fact that this is a marking contest, not a bumping contest.
And Plowman said the best thing during the tribunal was he said, I did not elect to bump. It wasn't, he did not
no
even
choice.
Elect. He wasn't trying to bump. He was just trying to spoil the ball. And there was, as a result, contact, which unfortunately resulted in a player getting injured. I think Plowman didn't come off too well from that either.
Of course not.
Anyway, look, they're going to appeal it, and I'm of the opinion that the AFL will do everything to uphold that, and they will not want, like I said, 2 out of 3 decisions overturned in one round. It just undermines them too much.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, but let's hope it does get up the appeal.
Not just for Carlton.
For football,
For football, because that's not how we want the game to go.
And it's bullshit. That whole outcome focus is just wrong. Surely intent is more important than outcome focus. And, you know, they're saying a marking contest. They're saying that, you know, he had another choice. He elected to bump. And the whole point is that O'Meara didn't see him coming. What does that mean for that big key leading forward coming out of the goal square with people filling the hole and backing in and getting smacked? They don't know what's coming. What is a forward not meant to leap when someone's in their space and they've got a clear run of the football? Because that's ultimately what we're comparing this incident to as well.
Yeah, no, exactly right.
We'll move it on.
So we've got Sydney Swans this week at the SCG, 3:20 on a Sunday. It's Wednesday as we record this, and Carlton are already up in Sydney, obviously due to some COVID issues down in Victoria. So it's going to be a tough game, but it's also, when we're talking about who's in and who's out, it's a winning formula, so to speak. So I wouldn't anticipate too many changes, but do you see any kind of obvious ones that you think might come in or out? Obviously, Plowman to come out.
Yeah, Plowman to come out, we know that for the week. It's not the ideal lead-up to a game when you sort of get told you're flying up 3-4 days earlier than you otherwise would. We haven't touched on the reserves, but the reserves got a belting, a good old-fashioned belting by Hawthorn, Box Hill Hawks. And well, I watched a fair bit of it, what I could take of that game amongst doing a few other activities. No one clearly stood out for me, and which is really disappointing considering things we had quite a few AFL-listed players back there. Nobody really stood up. I mean, we'll make special mention for Brody Kemp, his first game, and he looked like one of the better players, a bloke who hasn't played football in however long and hasn't played senior football or against men. So it's fantastic to see Brody Kemp out there. He's confident. Yep. The body is looking good. He's got a great size, as we know, but he looked confident. It'll take him a bit of time to get to some continuity, and quite often sort of the second and third weeks back after a big layoff aren't as good as the first week. But that was the highlight for the game for me. I don't see too many players pushing senior selection as a result of that.
Looks like Williams and Kennedy had high 20s, but in a game, and SBS, I know people have pointed out, he had, I think, 11 tackles, he had 13 disposals. I mean, I didn't see the game, but you did, but I'd say in a game when you get beaten by 84 points, if you're not really seeing a standout, and I mean, 11 tackles is a great effort, but how much is being second to the ball or chasing? I don't know. So pretty disappointing that we get absolutely trounced by Hawthorn, outfit by 84 points after we beat their senior side or the first team. So
yeah,
it doesn't look like there will be a hell of a lot of a change.
I'm not rewarding anybody. I'm not rewarding anybody. There, we've mentioned Plowman's going to be out. We've got Jack Martin coming in. He was held off. He possibly could have played against Hawthorn. He must be ready to go. They're not holding him back in the VFL, are they? Does he come straight in?
I said it last week. There's certain players that don't play twos, and he's one of them.
So we're saying Plowman out. So, you know, your back pocket, essentially, out, and Jack Martin coming in, who's been playing half forward flank, sort of forward pockets with some sort of pushing up to the wings. They're not really like for like, but we thought we were a bit sort of defensively heavy last week as it was. So it'll be interesting. I mean, what do we do? Do we try to replace Plowman? I know he has his critics, but he's performed pretty well against Papley in recent times. Anyway, don't have that lockdown. We know what Papley can do if he gets off the chain. Do we try to replace Plowman with a lockdown on Papley, or do we look at potentially, like we said, we had a lot of half-back flanks in the team. Does Stocker play more in the back line and try to fill that Plowman role?
I don't think we really have another lockdown defender, do we?
No, honestly. Newman? Does Nick Newman? Do we look at... I mean, look at the team we've got. I'm looking at those smaller. So I'm taking out Wiedering. I'm taking out Jones. And do we put anybody on? Do we place a lockdown defender? Do we try to replace Lockie Plowman's role, basically?
Oh, look, I mean, ultimately, you could see it as a way of we're not filling a position that we're losing a player for, but we're also going head-to-head against them, aren't we, to a degree? I think we've got enough defenders that we might be able to come up with something to try and mitigate Papley, but we're also adding Martin. which is going to be a worry for Sydney if he's playing at his best as well. So,
absolutely. I just hope Doherty doesn't get pushed back there, and Martin coming in and he goes back, because I've enjoyed his work on the wing, and I'd be love to see him sort of keep that freedom happening. But yeah, I think Martin definitely comes in. We're saying Plowman out.
Yep.
That's probably going to be it, isn't it?
So Casbolt's flown up with Sydney, which was, flown up to Sydney with the team.
He'll be in emergency, and depending, he'll be the first tall
in. Yeah, in these circumstances, you'd imagine they'd be flying up quite a lot more people than...
That have to, yeah.
Yeah.
So they're out.
I don't see how Casbolt gets in after TDK and Pitnet, and considering that the tall forwards are going fine.
Are you being a bit cynical of the fact that he was listed as managed? Do you think he may have already been managed, and he's therefore back in the frame for senior selection?
No, he won't play this week.
Yeah. No, I agree. He'll be managed again, perhaps. But he'll definitely be the emergency, in, depending on any potential injuries to the talls.
And Casbolt's a very good emergency, because, like we said, if anything happens to the spine, he's...
Ruck, forward, back.
You know, it was all good having SPS as your emergency, and, you know, it does fill a very good role. But if a ruckman goes down, or a centre-back goes down, or, you know, God forbid, a forward goes down, Casbolt is the perfect, he's the perfect swingman. He's the perfect guy that we've had to be able to fill these spots. So he's a good emergency.
Absolutely. And you probably don't want to have a milestone game at the moment. Plowman had his 100th for Carlton, and missing this week.
Yep.
Casbolt the week before, his 150th, and managed.
Yep.
But, look, it'll be a good game. Let's talk about the game. Just have a quick sort of analysis. I mean, Sydney are travelling pretty well. A bit unexpected for what most pundits had them for, in the preseason or before the season started. They're a very good, disciplined team. You don't beat Sydney unless you play well, because Sydney doesn't play badly. And you need to earn it. You can't take shortcuts against a well-drilled team.
They're a disciplined
like
team, and they know how to play the ground. And I think it'll be a really good game. Sydney would have to go in as favourites.
As they should, as they should be.
And I don't know, hopefully that, the one thing I hope we can just try and build on that one win and really take a bit of confidence from it and show that we did play good football against Hawthorn at times. Let's learn from the times when we had the lapses or the red zone goals, as you call them, or red time goals, as you call them, and really just kind of, I always say it all the time, we play four quarters of footy and we're a really good shot.
4-6. We're at some stage we need to build momentum. And it's not a given, but we should, and it generally does happen. There's no and it happens after wins, so there's no reason why we can't sneak. And you're due to sneak a few victories. We've won the games we should have won this year. We've been competitive in other ones that we probably shouldn't, and at times in less than competitive. But we've generally won the games we have. We need to hit a streak where we win some of those games where we're not expected to. And that's what actually sparks your season. That's where you get your true belief, is when you beat somebody that the pundits, the media are basically saying you're not going to knock over, and you do. That's when your confidence grows and your spirit grows.
Yeah, no, absolutely right.
All right, that probably does us. And again, we apologise for the audio quality. We'll hopefully have this sorted out next week, but most of it stems from you not being able to join me in the Bagger basement. But we do apologise. Hopefully the content makes up for it.
Let's hope so, and let's hope we have a good win over the weekend, Chris.
Let's really hope so. That would be nice. 5-6 and a bit of momentum, 2 wins in a row, and West Coast away from home the week after that. Good opportunity for them.
That's right.
All right, thanks everyone for listening. We are the Blue Baggers.
Happy birthday, Pan.